let's start today with the financial impact of some news out of Washington. Bypassing Congress on Saturday, President Trump issued a set of executive orders and memoranda to deliver emergency pandemic aid. Now, among them are a new supplement to the unemployment benefits and the deferral of a portion of the payroll tax. Qualifying residents in Massachusetts received their last unemployment supplement back in July. The presidential actions, they're ambiguous, they raise a lot of questions, and we begin with the financial implications here in the Commonwealth. And we want to hear from you on this subject. How badly do you feel we need aid from the federal government? How badly do you need this new unemployment supplement? And do you have faith that Congress can come to a compromise on more relief? Do they need to? Are these executive actions by the president enough? Call us with your thoughts at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So joining us now to help us think about the financial implications here in Massachusetts is Marie Frances Rivera, president of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Marie Frances, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So let's just start with the big picture question. Will these directives have an impact on pocketbooks and families here in Massachusetts?
So these executive orders are really Band-Aid solutions. Looking at the details, they don't provide any real comprehensive financial relief for families or individuals here in the Commonwealth or across the nation, or our state and local budgets that are hurting.
So are you saying people are not going to feel any relief from these four actions?
So I mean, if we break them down, if we look at the unemployment benefits, there are some relief. There is some relief there for families, but it's smaller than the relief that the federal government has been providing, and it's very temporary. So we're pulling money. They're pulling money essentially from FEMA to support these continued $400 a week payments. And they will only last about 6 weeks. And then they're also asking the states to pitch in, which is really going to dig into what we have here in the Commonwealth to support our families.
So let me just break that down for our listeners. The presidential memoranda states that we would extend the supplemental unemployment benefits at $400 a week. 75% of that would be paid by the federal government. 25% would have to be paid by state governments. Existing funds would be directed coronavirus relief funds and essentially emergency management funds to pay for that. And there have been some reports that say the money could run out within 6 weeks. The president's memorandum, as I understand it, says it could run till December 6th or until the money runs out. It sounds like you do not feel confident that there is sufficient money there for those dollars to make it to people in any kind of extended way.
I do not. I think this recession is going to last quite some time. And Massachusetts has one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation, about 17%. We have 2 million claims that have been filed since the beginning of the pandemic, and we really need longer term and adequate relief.
All right. So this is part of the other question that comes up then, because we'll hit all four segments, but let's stay on the unemployment benefits for now. Because they require a 25% payment by the state or any state, it raises questions. One, does the state have to do that? Two, does the state have the money to do it? For example, has Massachusetts already allocated its coronavirus relief funds to other things? Would it have to, you know, sort of rob Peter to pay Paul here? Could we even do it?
So essentially right now we're seeing budget shortfalls of $4 to $7 million here on the state level. So we're really struggling as a state to meet our priorities. We would have to be robbing somebody to pay somebody else, essentially. And who would be robbing is schools. We'd be robbing, you know, providing adequate healthcare to folks in order to make up and pay for this expanded unemployment insurance. Yes.
And then the question also comes up, if the state wants to do this but can't pay, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin seemed to hint on Fox yesterday that it wasn't going to be required that states dip into their coronavirus relief funds to get the other 25%. Here it is.
They can either take that out of the money we've already given them, or the president can waive that. We've been told by the states they can get this up and running immediately.
But there's nothing in writing about a presidential waiver. So from a state fiscal policy standpoint, can you in any way treat that as a real possibility, or does one have to treat it like it doesn't exist unless it's in writing?
I mean, I just think it's completely inexcusable that we don't have clear guidance on an executive order. And this has happened, with several programs that have come down from the federal government. But with this, it's needed so critically, immediately. I just feel like clear guidance is really needed on what funds we're able to use for this or not.
Okay, let's shift to the payroll tax because another thing in these memoranda were the idea that employees can delay their portion of the payroll tax contribution until January. Now, the president says if reelected, he'll get a bill passed to make that a permanent tax cut, but that's a lot of contingencies. Otherwise, the bill comes due for employees in 2021. Is this a good idea for mass residents and can it work?
So again, this is an example of something that's talked up, but in reality is not really going to help the pocketbooks of folks here in Massachusetts and across the nation. As you mentioned, it is a deferral of a tax that then an employee would have to pay unless it was extended. And I mean that's just not real relief, right? And also, if you look at the payroll tax, what the payroll tax funds is Social Security and Medicare and other things that we, need during the time of this pandemic and moving forward. So again, it's another situation of, robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Let's talk about evictions now. There is an executive order on eviction assistance. It doesn't provide a moratorium on evictions. It directs the federal government to find essentially the ability to provide additional assistance to renters. At the same time, Massachusetts has a moratorium on evictions until October 17th, which the governor extended last month. So is it important that the federal government take steps here, or do people in the Commonwealth already have sufficient protections?
There are sufficient temporary protections on evictions and foreclosures here. But the thing is, people would need real rental relief. Just, saying that you won't have to pay your mortgage for 3 months or you won't have to pay your rent for 3 months, we really need something more comprehensive because once those 3 months or 6 months come due, folks are going to have to pay those bills. I think you were clear in stating that Trump's executive order really does a lot of nothing, really. And luckily, here on the state level, we do have some protections, but again, they're temporary protections for renters and for small landlords and homeowners.
All right, so let's hit that last memorandum, which addresses student loans. This one looks like it could have some benefit for Massachusetts residents who have federally based student loan money they borrowed from federal sources. It puts a moratorium on payments and no interest through September 30th. Is that a bright spot for residents here?
So it's great. I mean, it's an extension of essentially what was in the CARES Act to freeze the payments and to freeze the interest, though it only applies for the federally backed loans, not private loans. So there are still borrowers who are left out of this.
All right. Well, we will continue to watch this and we'll look forward to more analysis from you. That's Marie Frances, excuse me, Marie Frances Rivera, President at the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Thanks for joining
Thank
us
you.
today.
Thank you, Tiziana. Thank you so much.
Yep. And before I turn to our next guest, let's go to the phones for just a minute. Take a couple calls. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Greg is on the line from Salem. Greg, what's on your mind?
Well, the unemployment extension is going to hurt. It's already hurting. In fact, I'm at the point where I've had to contact a lawyer so I can be prepared to file Chapter 7 if things don't improve and I can't find work.
I'm sorry to hear that, Greg. And would this extra $400 a week make a difference in staving that off for you?
I think it would. I mean, five or six, it makes me a little bit more solvent for the short term. It buys me time. Four is kind of on the bubble. But I'm sure there's people that are worse off than me that has a bigger impact.
Well, Greg, I'm wishing you well, and I'm glad you called in. Thank you. And let's take one more call. We've got Dave from Yarmouth. Dave, go ahead.
So we just have to figure out how much money it's going to cost. I mean, which is worse, printing more money or giving people a little bit less money on unemployment in an effort to hope to get them back to work. So there's a trade-off. Either your last guest said you had to pay Peter to pay Paul, Rob from Peter to pay Paul. We're doing the same thing if we give extra benefits. We don't have that kind of money. We just print it. Eventually, that's got to catch up with us.
All right. Thanks for expressing that concern, Dave. And that's a good chance for us to turn to our next guests, because we want to look at these executive actions, what they might mean for the future of Corona relief, what they mean legally, and what Congress and Massachusetts congressional delegation should do next, given that they're out there. We are joined by Michael Capuano, former Massachusetts congressman and now the public affairs director for Foley and Lardner. Welcome back.
Hey, Tiziana. Nice to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, too. And also with us is WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner. She's a retired federal judge and a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Judge Gertner, welcome back to Radio Boston to you, too.
Good to be on.
And listeners, keep calling in with your thoughts and your questions. There are questions, constitutional questions here, questions about whether Congress should act in addition or independently, whether it should push back legally. What are you thinking about the status of our coronavirus relief? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So let me just invite both of you, and Congressman, maybe I'll start with you to reflect on this conversation you just heard. Could these benefits make a substantial or measurable difference for Massachusetts residents?
They'll make a difference to a handful of people, and they, you know, you'll take what you can get in tough times. But they will not make a difference to the general economy. They will not make a difference to millions of people in this state. To be perfectly honest, this is really mostly a political ploy and game by the president to avoid legitimately negotiating with people he doesn't agree with, and to look like he's doing something when, in fact, he's doing virtually nothing.
You know, I was thinking about that. We've had a number of representatives from our delegation on over the last few weeks. Several of them expressed, I guess optimism is a fair word, or at least a belief that Congress would get something passed. They haven't. If the president had not done this over the weekend, Congressman, would something have happened, or would we still just be back and forth in these negotiations?
Well, you can't do something without the president. I mean, the presidency is required to be put at the table. And let's not forget that his friends run the Senate as well. So there has to be a compromise. I actually believe there will be one. It shouldn't be taking this long. All the things I have read and the people I've talked to clearly indicate that there's lots of middle ground, that compromises could be found. But you can't find a compromise if you're not looking for one.
Judge Gertner, on Sunday on Fox, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had some very strong words about the president's actions. Here she is.
What the president did is, I agree with the Republican senator, said it was unconstitutional slop.
So I'm going to leave the slop piece out, but I am going to ask you about the constitutionality of these three memoranda and this one executive order.
Well, there's a difference between the orders that are directed at the reappropriation of money, that essentially shifting money from one federal fund, in this case FEMA, to unemployment relief. That's in one box. Put that aside. And the other, of deferral of payroll taxes and deferral of student loans, in another box. The issue of changing the appropriation of money from one box into another can be challenged, and it sounds like it will be challenged, because the appropriation power rests with Congress, full stop. Now, there's some leeway in that, but the appropriation power and the final analysis rests with Congress. Congress, the president can't say Congress appropriated the funds to X. Never mind. There's law that he can't say, I'm not going to spend it. He can't say, I can't spend it for other purposes. And so this money is coming from the FEMA budget and is going into this relief. In addition, there are issues, both political and practical, about directing the states to contribute what they, the remaining 25%. That's interesting as to where the source of that would be. The other orders, with respect to deferring student loan repayment and the payroll tax, is within the president's authority up to a point. Forgiving the tax is not within the president's authority. Deferring it to a limited degree is within his authority. And the student loan issue, in fact, he could defer that indefinitely and even forgive those debts. But taxes, again, that's part of the constitutional authority. He can defer. He can't say never mind with respect to that. So he's really on, constitutional quicksand. I won't put it in Speaker Pelosi's way, but this is quicksand.
But the president did say that it was a deferral on the payroll tax unless he got reelected, at which point he would get a bill passed that would then make that a permanent So that right. would be legal to do it that way, right?
That's right. That is the only way he can do it, bearing in mind, again, as your previous speaker said, the payroll tax funds Social Security and Medicare. So deferring it only depletes those trust funds even more at a time when people need it. That's not a legal issue, but that certainly will be a political consideration.
And I just want to backtrack for a minute, too, and make it clear to our listeners that the money that the president was talking about reallocating, there's a $44 billion reserve associated with FEMA. And the memorandum basically says we'll spend down until there are $25 billion left or until December 6th, whichever comes first. And then, as we heard in the first segment, there's some controversy about whether that money would last to anywhere even close to December 6th. Congressman,
right.
let me
and
just give you a chance
to... Especially in the context of a hurricane season that is reportedly more active this year than it will be in previous years.
Excellent point, and a big source of concern. So, Congressman, let me just give you a chance first to react to what you just heard from Judge Gertner.
Everything Nancy said was 100% right. She just said it more politely than I might have.
Well, I'll use that chance to put the number out to our callers, too. 800-423-8255. Call in politely and tell us what you're thinking about these executive orders and memoranda. How important are they? And what else needs to be done? And I'm going to come back to you on this, Congressman. You talked about the fact that you still think something is going to, that Congress is going to do something. President Trump said on Saturday he blames Democrats for stalling the bill and that he had to work around them. Here he is.
We're doing that without the Democrats. We should have been able to do it very easily with them, but they want all of these additional things that have nothing to do with helping people.
Now, I understand that one party often blames the other party when the negotiation comes to an impasse, but what are the real sticky wickets in getting another bill passed?
Well, it's not just the president. It's some of his friends in the Senate and his zealot supporters out there that do. Many of whom don't believe in things like helping people who are unemployed. The fact that he came up with $400 a week as opposed to $600 extra, I'm sure pleases some people. But I'm also equally sure it has angered some of his base supporters. They don't like the idea. That's why he put 25% of it onto the states. The idea of attacking Social Security is not a new idea from this current Republican Party, not the old one, not the one that are more reasonable, but from this current, you know, these radicals that are running the party at the moment, they've been after Social Security from day one. Is it
so
a surprise that Donald Trump and his friends don't want to help people deal with the possibility of eviction in the worst economic crisis we've faced in a long time? None of this surprises me.
Are you saying that this payroll deduction or postponement, excuse me, is in fact a backdoor attack on funds for Social Security?
Of course it is. That's why the president said he'd do it permanently. And you know, that's not new. He's wanted to defund Social Security from day one. And he's not the only one. Many of his supporters in the House and the Senate want to do the same thing. And it's not new. This has nothing to do with COVID or hurricanes or anything else. They've been trying to do this for a generation. So absolutely, why would he do it permanently otherwise? I mean, if he really thought it was just a response to a crisis, that he would make it short term and then end it at the end of the crisis. I could still have the argument, but the minute I hear the word permanent in undermining Medicare and Social Security, my antennas go, they're already up, but they go up even further. is nothing more than the typical political ploy that, you know, that's a creeping socialism. And I will tell you, as a Social Security recipient, it would anger me to tell me that, you know, that it's not going to be there tomorrow. And it would anger me just as much to tell me it won't be there for my children.
So, Judge Gertner, now, obviously, one of the questions on the table is legal action. Who will take it? Will it work, et cetera? Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, said to Fox News on Sunday that he thinks challenging this in court is going to look bad for Democrats. Here he is.
I would say if the Democrats want to challenge us in court and hold up unemployment benefits to those hardworking Americans that are out of a job because of COVID, they're going to have a lot of explaining to do.
Now, there has been argument that the president is usurping Congress's power of the purse here. There's also at least an argument convincing to some to make that this puts Democrats in a really tough spot in Congress if they want to sue. I guess my question is, if they don't sue and this is a usurping of some of the power of the purse, is something permanent lost in our balance across the branches of government.
I think that that's right. I think that the issue is just as I understand, the Democrats have been holding out for a longer term, more permanent solution, which is what Nancy Pelosi was saying, rather than a short-term solution. The president has put a short-term solution before them, and indeed one that raises long-term constitutional implications that you described about how far a president could go. In addition, the payroll tax issue, this is really something Mr. Capuano, I want to call you Representative Capuano, but in any event, and that is the payroll tax reduction or deferral won't necessarily get people back to work. In other words, the implication here is that minus the payroll taxes, it will somehow be easier for people to get back to work. I don't think that that's going to happen in this pandemic. In other words, that's not going to affect an employer's calculation, oh, I can put this cook back or I can have this employee back because I don't have to pay payroll taxes. It's much deeper than that.
Congressman, what about that?
100% right. That's, 6-7%, 15%, depending on your count, of a payroll. That's not, you don't hire people on the basis of 10% difference. You have to look at the basic wage, which is really the bulk of the cost, to go with it. And also by need. People don't just hire people just for the fun of it. They hire a cook or a truck driver because they need them. They need them to conduct their business. Again, I'm not opposed to temporarily reducing certain taxes if somebody can make an argument that it helps. This is not the be-all and end-all. I am a firm believer that we need to do short-term direct support to those people who need it the most. And in this particular case, it would be those who are unemployed. They're the ones who have suffered the most. And it could be short-term. And again, you can make an argument whether it should be $600 or $400. Those are fair arguments. There's no magic number. But again, that screams for compromise. If you believe it's $600 and the president believes it's $400, you can't come up with a $500 deal. Is this brain surgery? Everybody gives a little bit, and you come up with a number that will please most people, but not everyone. And since the president's already picked $400, the Democrats seem to be stuck on $600. I propose that we just take $500. Period. Walk away, and let's get back to business and get people whole again to the best of our ability, and still deal with the crisis that we continue to have.
And Judge Gertner, in our last 30 seconds or so, are you expecting to see lawsuits?
I think so. I think that there will be, regardless of Mnuchin's comments, I think there will be because there's a principle involved. So you have an order which is not going to accomplish what the president wants it to accomplish and at the same time raise other more serious issues.
All right. And that is WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner, a retired federal judge and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Judge Gertner, thanks.
Thank you.
And that's Michael Capuano, former Massachusetts congressman and now the public affairs director for Foley and Lardner. Thanks for coming back again.
Thanks, Izzy. Nice talking to you.